welcome to the Circles and Squares News Report for Monday, November 22nd, 2020. I'm James, and as always, I'm joined by the esteemed host of the Circles and Squares Extra Podcast, is Katie.
Hello. Hi, everyone. How are you?
Oh, I'm doing well, Kate. How are you? It's always a pleasure to get together. I say it every time. Always nice to get together, talk about some game stuff, even if not all of our stories are necessarily super happy today. But, that's how it is sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess without further ado, we'll get into it. I just wanted to, off the top, just mention thank you to everybody who joined our recent contest, a giveaway for Battlefield 2042. We managed to give away 2 digital copies of the Ultimate Edition of the game, so congratulations to our winners. That was Zaytoven Arts and Gino Viteri on Twitter. Congrats, guys. Hope you're enjoying Battlefield. And the other thing I wanted to mention to everyone just before we started was please feel free to go and check out the rest of our shows. We have 3 shows over on the channel right now. And we just recently did an episode of our main show, the Circles and Squares podcast, all about Streets of Rage 4 and a couple other games, as well as talking about our favorite video game sequels. So please go show that episode some love, throw it a like, you know, all that good stuff. And as per usual, today, Kate, we're going to be starting off the news show with some PlayStation news from the last couple of weeks, and then move into the out-of-town scoreboard for other gaming news, and then closing out with a fun little video game story like we usually do, although this one, again, kind of negative. We'll see where it goes. But let's start it off, Kate. We got our first story here is PlayStation 5 is 1 year old as of a few days ago. I think it happened last week, but there was a big post on the PlayStation blog from Jim Ryan just kind of saying, you know, happy birthday, PS5. And, you know, some of the landmarks about some of the games that have come out over the last year, you know, Ratchet and Clank, Returnal, Deathloop, a lot of big games, you know, and also the studio acquisitions from Sony as well with Bluepoint and Firesprite and Housemarque. And so, it's been an interesting year, you know, with the stock shortages and everything. But, we've been lucky enough, obviously, to have PS5s for the year. And, what are your thoughts on the first year of the system?
Yeah, I can't believe it's been a year already. It does not feel like I've had my console for that long. And like you said, we've been so lucky to have them because I have really enjoyed my PS5 this last year. And I haven't even really played that many games, but just having the few that I did and also a couple of the PS4 games upgraded on the PS5 with the DualSense has been a real treat. I got to shout it out. Demon's Souls and Returnal were the 2 big heavy hitters for me. And I've thoroughly enjoyed both of them. And I also got to say that I want to shout out our friend Astrobot as well, because that was such a fun little game to have in addition. And so I think overall it was a relatively solid year game-wise. I think, you know, obviously it would have been nice to have, less delays and a few more things come out, like God of War would have been nice to have at the first year of the life cycle. But overall, I think they did pretty well considering what's going on in the world. And I think even next year even looks like it's going to be a really big year for PlayStation as well.
Oh my God. Next year's just going to be insane if you look at all the games that were delayed and all that. But they go over here some of the stats, like PlayStation 5 gamers specifically have played 4.6 billion hours of gameplay on PS5. More than 26 million hours of content, and the top games are, some of the usual suspects like Fortnite, Call of Duty, but Assassin's Creed Valhalla's in there as well. Demon's Souls made the top 10, which is really great to see. I mean, obviously it's a big game on the system, but, you know, those games sometimes are not for the most mainstream audience, so just seeing it up there is really cool. Yes. Miles Morales also.
I'm so proud of them, and we should specify, that's for a year based on gameplay hours. So it's not necessarily, sales, that's gameplay hours. So, the Fortnite, Call of Duty, like, those kind of games are, like, infinite play, right? Like, you don't beat them, so it makes sense that those are, like, pretty high up, whereas something like, you know, Demon's Souls, like, when you're done, you can new game plus and keep going through it, but, like, it does have a finite endpoint, so
it's up to you if you want to replay.
Exactly. So it's always cool to see that in Miles Morales and, you know, those games that kind of you're meant to play for a certain amount of time show up, because that just means so many people are enjoying them and going through new game plus and, you know, using the online features, and so that's really cool if they can kind of even compete in the same realm as, like, yeah Call of Duty and FIFA is really high up there always too.
True, yeah. So I mean, yeah, it's been a good year. If I was to put you on the spot and say, hey, what's the one thing you'd like to see from the PS5? It could be big or small, you know, a little update here or there, something you'd like to see just to in the second year, the PlayStation's second year, to make it even better. Any ideas what you might be asking for?
Give me that Bloodborne upgrade. Give me that PS5 Bloodborne upgrade. It's kind of a meme at this point, but also like, oh, that would be nice. I just want to see more games. And honestly, if I'll get some karma points here and say, if I could see anything, it's just more people able to find a console and to purchase one. Yeah. Because that is the biggest thing plaguing the system right now.
That's what I was going to say too. I mean, that's the number one thing, obviously. I was going to take it in a different direction and just say, like, you know what I would love to see is PlayStation's version of the Xbox Design Labs, where you could do your own custom controllers and do that kind of thing with it.
And the panels on the side of the PS5, because they're so easy to remove. Yeah. I would love to get some like custom plates for it.
Yeah, there's so much potential. And it's the kind of thing where it's like, you know, I wouldn't necessarily want to buy, you know, third party kind of panels to slide on there, but if I was to be able to get official PlayStation ones, mm-hmm. you know, like that's way more appealing, at least for me.
Absolutely.
But yeah, happy birthday PlayStation, and here's to all the best for the second year of the console. But our next story, Kate, is another one to do with PS5, obviously. The GTA trilogy has had a lot of problems since it came out. This is just more interesting to mention. I mean, this is, of course, across all different platforms as well, not just specific to PlayStation. But the GTA trilogy is an interesting one because I think Rockstar has an air of, correct me if I'm wrong on this, but I mean, their games tend to be, I mean, pretty out of the box, pretty polished and work pretty well. Like, I don't think there's ever been a huge amount of like game breaking bugs in a GTA game or like Red Dead off of launch. And so, I mean, obviously all games have their problems here and there, but this GTA Trilogy Definitive Edition has just come out with like a ton of issues. I don't know how much you've seen online, but some of the character models are just, they're looking kind of strange. And there was like the rain and I think it's like Vice City. I don't know exactly which one, but like the rain animation, when that rain is falling from the sky, like you can't see anything that's going on in the game. It seems almost like a cyberpunk level of broken for a lot of people. And I think it's interesting how a company like Rockstar was basically put out something that was in such a dire state. I mean, saying they didn't really know it was going to be that bad. And it just really surprised me. And I mean, they've got updates coming on, but it's interesting to see a company like Rockstar have this big of a mess, I think, off the start of something that people loved and were anticipating for so long.
Yeah. Well, especially to mention too, like comparing it to Cyberpunk, like Cyberpunk was something really new and like ambitious, and it was almost like they had struggled to make it work because they maybe took on they bit a little bit more they could chew. But with this, it's like, well, these are, you know, like remakes, remasters of like really old games at this point too. So it's kind of, there's a little bit less of that like understandability towards it. But at the same time, like, yeah, Rockstar is, you know, I think they're one of those companies that people have a really high praise for, and they don't make tons of games, but the games they do make are always really high quality. And like, you compare this to Red Dead 2, where like the amount of attention to detail and all the extra things they went above and beyond they didn't need to do is like amazing. Like the night sky doesn't need to have a perfect star like calendar that it follows, and like pinpoint perfect constellations depending on where you are that cycle like correctly throughout the world and stuff. And it's like, did they need that? No. Is it absolutely amazing and enhances the game? Yeah, it's pretty cool. And so it's interesting or weird to see them kind of flop on something like this, but I'm sure they'll work it out. And at, you know, at the very least, you can still play GTA 5 for the next 15 years, so
yeah, because God knows GTA 6 ain't coming until like 2035. But you know what I read the other day too, and I don't know all the details on this, but I heard that on, at least if you bought through the Rockstar store on PC, that they're going to be including in one of the updates like the original trilogy, not the definitive versions of these games, also like for free. And I don't know if that's going to be coming to PlayStation, but it's something to look out for sure, because I think that's one of those things that I really like about a lot of remasters, is when it's the ones that let you like instantly toggle between the original and the old look of the game, or the remastered look. I think you could do that in Shadow of the Colossus. So you can just kind of toggle between like the original PS2 look and the new one. And it's pretty cool, especially having played those games as a kid when they came out, to be able to do that. So that would be a feature that like I would like to see for this. Not that I would probably ever play it. Like, I have so little experience with GTA. But I mean, those kind of modes are always what I think would be like the best thing to include.
Yeah.
Obviously, they've got a lot more to fix before that enters this mode, though, or this game.
Yeah, that's cool. That reminds me, I think when I bought the BioShock collection for 1, 2, I don't know if Infinite was included, but the first two BioShocks, it was like the remaster ones. And on PC, apparently they'd had some issues, or some people like said they didn't run super well. And so the collection I bought came with the original games as well, so that I was able to just kind of play whichever version I wanted to, or whichever worked better for me. And so I managed to get through the remaster ones no problem, and so it ended up being unnecessary. But it was just a nice quality of life that it just was automatically like, they just came with it. I don't think I even remember reading about it. I was just wanting to buy the remaster, but they're like, Steam was like, here's the regular ones too. Like, please play BioShock in whatever capacity you can. It's amazing.
People should. That's good advice. Great advice. We have another story to break here, Kate. Now we're going to move away from the PlayStation news a little bit, although this is still kind of a games industry in general story, but we have to take a second. I know we haven't got into this one before, and this is something that's been going on for quite a while, with a lot of updates with Activision and Bobby Kotick and Blizzard and all of that. But I think that things have really just come to a head here, and we'd be kind of remiss not to mention it and kind of, you know, be part of that discussion, at least for whoever's listening that may not be aware of this kind of stuff. It's just good to learn. But Activision is facing a lot of criticism right now. Bobby Kotick is their CEO, and he's been just stepping on rakes in his yard for a little while now, hitting himself over and over again. But I think this might be the biggest news yet, which is there's been a lot of sexual harassment scandals and discrimination scandals over at Activision Blizzard. And earlier, the last couple of weeks, Jim Ryan from PlayStation actually came out and was saying, you know, they basically criticized Blizzard, saying that the company's just done enough to address their culture of discrimination and harassment and unfair treatment of women and minorities. And, you know, it's interesting to see PlayStation, like, such a big company with so many ties to Activision Blizzard, with like Call of Duty promotions and other games, come out and be this, you know, clear about their standing, I guess, with that company. And then Phil Spencer did the same thing with Xbox, basically saying, you know, they're disturbed by the horrific events that have come out with Activision Blizzard. So I guess a little bit more context would be, I believe it was the Wall Street Journal that came out and basically was alleging that, like, they've got clear evidence that Bobby Kotick was not only aware of some of the misconduct going on within the company, but also perpetrating some of it as well, which the board denied. And earlier in another report, they were saying that, or he had said that he wasn't aware of all of this. And they had that big donation of like, we're going to make a big difference and change the company culture, and here's $8 million to do all of this. And clearly that just hasn't really happened. And it just seems like such a rotten situation over there. And what there's nothing we can really do as people sitting right here. It's just frustrating to see that so many people, like, there's great people that work at those companies, you know, and their leadership is just obviously so rotten, and it's disturbing.
Yeah, it is horrible. It's been terrible to follow this, and it's just, you know, been going rampant through the industry. And it's tough to watch as, you know, just an outsider, but it's obviously good that these things are coming to light, because they obviously need to change. This is not acceptable. And someone like, you know, stupid Bobby up there is the kind of person that is responsible to a degree, right? And, you know, whether or not he was the one doing it or whatever he did, like, that's his responsibility as a CEO to make sure that his employees are safe and, you know, in a fair work environment and somewhere that they can be, you know, comfortable and come to work and make a living. And I can't imagine how stressful that would be for someone who's an employee and, you know, like, you've got bills to pay, but, you know, you don't want to come to work if it's not a safe environment. And so I'm really glad to see that, you know, some of the big names like Sony and Xbox are kind of weighing in on this. And I've seen some arguments of people only like, oh, you know, they just want to look good and it's good publicity for them. And like, sure, fair enough, it might be. But at the same time, like, those are people that have power to make a difference. And if they're stepping up and trying to incite some changes and use their resources, that's more powerful than, you know, just someone at home who's like, you know, we can talk about it on our show and we can tweet about it and all those things are great because that helps to spread the awareness in the news. But these people that have a much larger platform are, it's really good to see them step up. And even if this helps, you know, like one, two people have a better quality of life, that's worthwhile.
Yeah, I agree with you too. Like, I mean, like you said, like us talking about it on our show, which is relatively a very small beans on the internet, where, I mean, what can we really do? But PlayStation and Xbox, as the two major partners, along with like Steam, I guess, of Activision, are the difference with them is not only their platform, but it's also the fact that they, if they actually want to make any changes, like that will actually hit Activision Blizzard in the wallet. You know, mm-hmm. like that would lose them millions of dollars of, like, what if there was a universe where PlayStation or Xbox was like, hey, man, like, we're not putting any more of your games on our console. Like, we can't be associated with your brand mm-hmm. until things change over there. Like, that would be a huge game changer because of the sales figures. And like any of these big corporations, they just care about your money at the end of the day. Like, Bobby Kotick clearly doesn't care about the well-being of anyone at his company aside from his, you know, board of directors and their bank accounts, basically, or his bank account. So it's just such a sad situation. And all you can hope for is that something happens. But I mean, if all this comes to light, like, you got to think there's going to be criminal investigations too.
Oh,
like,
absolutely.
If he's being accused of, you know, being involved in sexual harassment. There was also a quote, I think, where there was a voice message of one of, I can't remember if it was Bobby or like one of the other directors there or something, but there was a message of like, they said they were going to have an employee killed or something as well. Like, there's a voice message of something like that. And it's just like, it's barbaric, honestly. And let's just hope that there's no, hint of lawyer and get out of the whole thing. But
yeah, exactly.
Bad stuff. I mean, it makes me even question, like, you know, obviously there's so many good people, like we said, that work at these companies. Like, the average employee is just a regular person. Like, but it makes you, or me at least, pause. Like, if I was to play games from Activision or Blizzard, like, I know I've played a lot of Overwatch in the past, and like Diablo is a fun game that I've played before. And I know like you're into HOTS, like, and these are games that it's like, I can't possibly like play one of these games now, just for, without a second of coming into my mind of like, oh, this is like Activision Blizzard, you know. And it's one of those like sort of moral dilemmas, even though I don't think, you know, canceling the games from those companies is really the solution. But I think just like building awareness of people, especially within the player base of these games, is probably the best we can do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and then you make a good point too, right? Because it's obviously like, it's never quite so simple as like, oh, just don't play Overwatch and everything's going to be fine, right? It's like, there isn't, and that's, you know, obviously like kind of a decision that an individual has to make, is if they feel comfortable playing that game or not. And obviously, like, you know, maybe you don't spend money on the loot box, and then that's, you know, where your comfort level sits. Mm-hmm, and there's obviously, like you said, yeah, a lot of employees that are just regular people, passionate people working in the industry, you know, like, you know, I'm the artist that drew Tracer, and like, I, you know, love her design, and I put my passion and all my soul into this work, and I'm really proud of what I created, right? And that person is not the same person mm-hmm. as like, you know, the people causing these issues. So I think, like, and the other thing too is like, there's so much discourse that goes around the internet, and it's really hard to know exactly what all the details are true or not, or what are, you know, like partially true but kind of taken out of context. And so I think it's just one of those things where the correct kind of like legal authority should step in and be the ones that kind of handle it. And I don't think it's the responsibility on any of the, you know, like individuals who play the mm-hmm. games. But at the same time, like, yeah, like, I, you know, be great if that guy wasn't making a ton of money, but it would be better if that guy was just in jail where he belongs. And then it doesn't matter if, you know, the other employees at Blizzard are making money. So
100%, 100%. Mm-hmm. Let's just hope it resolves itself as best it can. And everyone who's, you know, going through any stress due to him or anyone else on the company is, you know, hopefully their situation improves. That's all we can say.
Just be nice to people. Like, just don't be a dick. Like, you know, that's a simple life to live by. Just be kind and courteous, and don't be an asshole. And like, life doesn't have to be that more complicated than that.
Speaking of not being an asshole, there were some cool announcements from Phil Spencer at the Xbox 20th anniversary. Yeah, who is not an asshole.
He seems like a cool guy.
He's not an asshole. He's a good dude. That was a really great transition. Yeah, it was, as we mentioned last time on the news show, it was the Xbox's 20th birthday, and as much as we like to celebrate PlayStation's birthdays, I think 20th anniversary for another big company in the industry is a big milestone. And so since we chatted about it last time, I thought we would just bring it up once more and kind of go over a few of the announcements that they had at their event, because some of them are kind of cool. Like, I don't know about for you, but for me, like, they announced a 6-part documentary on kind of the story of Xbox and the development of the brand and like the everything about the company. So I thought that would be, I'm looking forward to watching that, kind of learning a bit more insights on like what goes into one of the most powerful companies in gaming right now. So I thought that was pretty cool. The other one I wanted to highlight too was, they're adding another 70 games backwards compatible to Xbox, including like Max Payne, Fear, a lot of original Xbox and 360 games. And this is just the kind of thing where it's like, Sony, come on. Like, why can't we put our old PlayStation discs in the PS5 and have at least them work? Like, not even, it doesn't have to necessarily be upgraded and work better. But this is just the kind of thing where Xbox is just slamming PlayStation right now.
It's like when we were playing Crash Bash recently and we got the PS3 out and we put the PS1 Crash Bashes in our PS3. And it was great. We had a blast playing it. But yeah, it'd be nice if we could throw Crash Bash into the PS5 and just have a night of that every now and again.
Yeah, something like that would be cool. But I mean, there's a few other things, like there's a Halo Infinite TV show coming and, some merchandise and all that. But those are the two that stood out for me. And I know you're not as involved in the Xbox stuff as I would be.
You know
be,
what? This is all pretty cool. I'm definitely going to watch the documentary. And I feel like I want to watch the presentation. I did miss it this week. I had a little bit of a crazy week. My cat went through some surgery and he's fine, everything's okay, but of course, like, that's been my main focus is on that little guy. So I kind of missed some of, absolutely, so I kind of missed some of this new stuff, but I think maybe he's gonna have his cone of shame on and we're gonna have a couple recovery nights these next few days, just sitting on the couch. So maybe we'll throw this on and see what our buddy Phil has to say.
Well, December 13th, so you don't have to wait that long to check it out. Next story, Kate, the Switch apparently has reached the midpoint of its life cycle, according to a story from Fanbyte. I just threw this in there out of kind of some speculation. Like, the Switch is right now, I guess it's technically the oldest of the current gen consoles, with the other two being relatively new. And so the Switch, I think it's in its fifth year now. And it's interesting that this is kind of the halfway point. Like, a 10-year generation would be, I feel like, pretty long, especially for Nintendo, but the Switch has just had so much outrageous success, and like the new OLED model that just came out. I wonder if that would include something like a Switch Pro, or I'm not sure, but I mean, the Switch has been such a cool and revolutionary console. I feel like the fact that we're going to be having it for a little longer, I guess, is a good thing. Cause I mean, I don't really want to spend more money on another Nintendo console right now, but I mean, I don't know. If you had any thoughts on this, but it's just kind of an interesting tidbit.
Yeah, I'm glad for it. Like, I think it's great. I think I agree. I'd like it maybe a more powerful Switch to come out, just because, you know, sometimes it kind of chugs along with a certain few games. And it's interesting to compare it to Xbox and Sony, because I think they're just so different at this point. Like, Nintendo's really just doing their own thing, and that's awesome. But I love the Switch. I'm glad they're going to keep supporting it for as long as they can. And I'm mostly just interested to see, like, This article interests me more in the idea of, like, I wonder what they're going to do next, because the Switch is just, like, perfect. Like, it's a perfect console. It's exactly what I would want from Nintendo going forward, is, like, the convenience of having the handheld, but also being able to dock it. And, like, it does have some motion controls and some extra little, like, the quintessential Nintendo, like, bells and whistles added onto it. But, like, I don't... Like, they're usually so innovative, right? Every console is so different from each other. And so I'm interested to see if they try to, again, come up with something really unique and different, or if they're like, you know what, like, everything's kind of brought us to the Switch. Everything we've created has culminated in this like perfect console that does all of it. Like, we're just going to make Switch 2 and then new Switch 2 Plus, like Switch Mega Ultra 3 Edition. And like, and they just Deluxe. Live on that forever. And I don't know what I would prefer. I think maybe just more Switches, but at the same time, like, they're so weird and creative at Nintendo. Like, who knows what they're going to come up with next.
Yeah, I'm with you. I just want more Switch as well. Like, I really don't know, aside from, you know, power boost, better battery, like, you know, better screen, all the generic kind of upgrades that you'd expect. I really don't know, like, what I would want more than the Switch. It's just perfect. Like, I wish in a hypothetical world that every console was a Switch just for that brand, because it would just be the best. Like, why would I not want my PlayStation 5 to come undocked and play handheld and then go back in? Like,
might be a little chunky to take. I can't imagine bringing my PS5 on the train.
Yeah, not so portable. But you know what I mean? Like, the design and like the idea of it is just so perfect. And and so I hope they don't lose the portability factor, because I mean, as much as I loved having like Game Boy DS and all those in back in the day, and having those like dedicated handhelds, like just having one that does everything is it's just better. So let's hope it stays that way. We're moving on to our last story here, to Kate, which is it's a big one though. It's the Game Awards. The finalists were announced for the major awards, and we've got our votes in. We're waiting passionately and patiently for December 9th, I think it is, right, for the show. But we'll probably do a reaction to that at some point. But we thought we would just go through and go over some of the more major awards and who we think who's gonna win and what we want to vote for. So. We'll start off here, Kate. We'd be remiss not to bring up Returnal in at least one category for you. So our first category we'll go through is Best Audio Design, of course, Returnal, Deathloop, Forza Horizon 5, Ratchet & Clank Rift Apart, and Resident Evil Village. I'm guessing you're going to go Returnal?
Well, I want Returnal to win, you know, at least something. It can win best action game, though. It's also up for that. It's also up for best game direction. So I think game direction is actually what it should win.
It's got a chance for either of those, I would say.
I think it should win both, but especially game direction, because it's just so unique and cohesive, and just the amount of interesting ways that they've blended everything together. Like, it's just an absolute work of art. I think best audio design. I don't actually know basically, like, I just haven't played any of these other games. I played Resident Evil Village, and that game was really nice. I liked it. I remember the audio being good, but it doesn't really stand out. So I don't know if that's gonna win. Returnal is a lot more of the subtle audio design. Like, a lot of it is more just kind of like atmospheric music. And then some really good boss themes. It kind of takes the Souls approach, where, like, it's not silent like Souls is, where, like, you just kind of, you're listening to your footsteps, and then when you go in the boss, that's where the big orchestral, like, swelling comes up. And so Returnal's got a little bit of that style, but it's very subtle, very atmospheric. There's one area that kind of is centered around music, and you keep hearing this, like, these piano keys that are important to the character in the story, so it's neat how the audio is used in that, in like a plot relevance way as well. So I think Returnal totally would deserve to win. I think it's got great audio design, and some of the boss tracks just absolutely are some bops. But I'm assuming Ratchet & Clank, Deathloop, and Forza all have great audio as well. And I can't speak to the comparison between the two, but I'll give Returnal over Resident Evil for sure.
I mean, for me, I've only played Ratchet & Clank is my only point of reference for this category. And I think that game is phenomenal in sound design, like, especially when you factor in, if you want to be really specific, like the stuff it was doing with the DualSense, with some of the like picking up the bolts came through there. It was pretty cool.
Yeah, Returnal had that too, with some of the, like, when you're cooled, some cooldowns are ready, it would make this noise for you. And so that's so cool.
Yeah, pretty cool. And I mean, all the guns sounded unique, and the enemies would banter back and forth with you and whatnot. But I wouldn't say that Ratchet & Clank was a revelation in audio design. It's just kind of, you know, a high quality game that came out. I would anticipate that it will be, I mean, I would guess Forza just off the top of my head, because I know that a lot of time those driving games are really strong in like the technical aspects, you know, like lighting and graphics and sound and all that. So I'll go with my guess being Forza, but I'm really really not sure. I don't think there's like a standout game in that category from what I can tell. Let's move to most anticipated game, though. This is another one for you. Of course, Elden Ring is number one on the list there, but we also have God of War Ragnarok, Horizon Forbidden West, and the sequel to Breath of the Wild and Starfield. So there's a lot of, like, that is a banging list of highly anticipated games, you know? Like, yeah. You wouldn't criticize someone for having any one of those as what they're looking forward
and
to most.
I think this category really sums up, like, the state of games, right? Or, like, the 2 years in comparison, in that this year, like, we had some really good games, and I don't mean to discredit some of the, you know, the great products that have been put out, but this year overall has been very quiet, I think. And so when you compare this list of anticipated games to the list that actually qualify for Game of the Year, they are not really comparable. And I think this just shows that, you know, like, the state of the world hit everyone really hard. There was a lot of, like, turmoil, a lot of, like, things being pushed back and things being, like, kind of reworked and redated for 2022. So this list, I mean, obviously it's Elden Ring, hands down, not even a, like, it's gonna win. Elden Ring is gonna win. I think it won last year for most anticipated. So
yeah, I think so. Yeah, there's an argument. I would argue that Breath of the Wild could have taken it if we had seen something from the game. The fact that we've seen Elden Ring and it's you know, more within the public perception, and, like, people have just played that test flight that came out, and there was some, you know, gameplay from different outlets, like, that I think is building a lot of anticipation.
Yes.
And had we had seen more from Zelda, I feel like that would be the one game that could be the juggernaut that could take down the Elden Ring hype in terms of, like, winning the most anticipated game award. But I mean, I think you're right. Elden Ring will win this for sure. Although for me, it's definitely God of War.
Yes. God of War is a close second. It's one of the only things that could maybe make me, for a split, the teeniest, tiniest little second, think, like, ooh, hang on. But no, Elden Ring. But like you said, like, every game on this list is going to be somebody's pick, and they are, like, totally worthy of winning the category. It's just a shame that, you know, Elden Rings didn't come out at the end of this year, and they've got to go up against it again. So it's just some bad luck, because otherwise they could very easily deserve the win.
It's all just a numbers game, you know, timing game. Shout out to Starfield, too. You know, we know very little about that game, but I'm, you know, I'm more of a space boy than a fantasy boy. And so I'm kind of tentatively interested in what that will be. Seeing them move away from, like, the more fantasy focus, but we'll see. Next up, independent game, best independent game. We have, it's a really competitive category, I think, this year too, with Death's Door, Kena, Bridge of Spirits, Inscription, Loop Hero, and 12 Minutes, which I'm a little bit surprised to see 12 Minutes on the list after the, you know, I would say mixed reception that it got, mixed to negative reception, I would say that it got. I've actually not played any of these aside from Loop Hero, which I thought was very, very innovative, the way that you didn't really control your own character. Like, it was very much like watching, you know, just watching what happened and then kind of interacting and choosing equipment for your character. Very unique take on that kind of roguelike, you know, elements where you go on runs, take stuff back, build your town out. But just the gameplay loop was a lot different, loop. You know, so that would be a cool one in terms of, like, the idea. And I think a lot of times indie games, like, the best ones are the ones with the new ideas, right? Because that's where we see a lot of innovation in the industry, of, like, new fresh takes. But at the same time, I know a lot of people love Death's Door, and Ken has done really well also, so I could see definitely those two, I would think, would be the front runners.
Yeah, I think so. Inscription, it's funny that this comes up, because I actually heard about this game this morning. Not the 22nd when this is coming out, but on Saturday when we were recording, I first saw this game and it looks really neat. Like, I'm a big sucker for roguelikes and card games, and it also looks really scary, though. And so I don't know how much I want to mix that, but, like, some of the, just, like, the pictures have got these really, like, creepy looking guys in the background that you're playing cards against. And so it's definitely something I want to look into more. And it definitely looks like it's doing something different that I haven't seen before. And yeah, Loop Hero, 12 Minutes, like, those are both really innovative games as well. Like, just kind of a nice, like, palate cleanser experience. Kena looks amazing. I really can't wait to play it. That was supposed to be the game I bought before I got Returnal. and got hooked on that. But I still intend to play Kenna. It looks phenomenal. But I'm really into Death's Door right now. It is such a fun game. It is so incredibly polished, more polished than a lot of AAA games. It's really quirky. It's got a great sense of humor. The controls are simple but fantastic. The combat and the puzzle solving is really satisfying, and it kind of does, maybe not so much the puzzles, they stay a little bit simple, but the combat is escalating nicely. I think when I haven't spoken about it on the show yet, but that was kind of one of my thing I was looking forward to when I was playing. I was like, you know, it's really good, but I hope that it kind of ramps up a bit, and it has been doing that. And so I've just really been enjoying Death's Door. So I'd give it that my personal pick, but it is a strong category. So I think honestly, like, this might be the strongest grouping of games for me personally than any of the other categories, aside from anticipated, obviously.
I think indie is always one of the strongest categories, I feel. Mm-hmm. And I feel like a big reason for that is because, like, game of the year, they don't often take into account a lot of indies. Like, it usually is the bigger AAA games, maybe with one or two indies thrown in there on the list. Like, Hades won last year, right? Or was it the year before?
I don't remember, but I mean it happens.
It won something. I mean, it won a lot of awards. But I mean, more often than not, though, I feel like best indie game is almost like a second game of the year category, but just for the lower budget kind of games. It's interesting.
Yeah.
Best art direction is our next category. We have, once again, Deathloop is on there. Kena: Bridge of Spirits, Psychonauts 2, Ratchet and Clank Rift Apart, and The Artful Escape. And I'm here to tell everyone listening to the podcast right now, The Artful Escape must win this category. Yep. I have started playing that. I'll talk about it on an upcoming show. I mean, I think that game is that if you don't think video games are art, you need to sit down and play The Artful Escape and just see exactly the beauty that this medium can have, because that game is something else, I'll tell you what. I mean, I think these games all have an interesting art direction, but Artful Escape, like, man, it's in the name, art.
Yeah, I think that would be my vote for this category as well. I think the difference with that game is, and I haven't played it yet, but I've done some looking into it because it looks fantastic. But with the other games, they seem like, you know, their art is an important part of them. They're beautiful worlds. Like, you know, Kenna: Bridge of Spirits is just it's a Pixar movie come to life. And, like, obviously Ratchet and Clank with the rifts and the worlds they've created is, you know, they're using that SSD and it looks good. And, like, Psychonauts has obviously got that really, like, psychedelic, like, really distinct style it's got going for it. And they're all really good contenders. Also Returnal. But The Artful Escape is a game that is built around its art style, and I could see it looks like that's integrated into every aspect of the game, and it is like what the game is quintessentially about, as opposed to something like Ratchet and Clank. It's like, it's a beautiful, beautiful, like, visual masterpiece of a game, but it's a game first, and then the art kind of, you know, enhances it.
Yeah, exactly.
So it's a little bit of a different approach, I think, to the art, whereas Artful Escape reminds me of one of those, like, more journey style games where it's really about this artistic experience more so than, you know, sitting down and shooting some bad guys. So
I think you're right. I think that's got to be the lock. I mean, I think Psychonauts is, like, my second pick, just because I love kind of it's almost like Tim Burton-y kind of world, but in a 2D cartoon style. Like, I really love the art direction of the Psychonauts franchise, but again, there's just other things going for it, whereas the Artful Escape is literally like I've taken so many screenshots playing that game, and I'm probably not even halfway. Like, it's just, oh my god, beautiful. But finally, Kate, let's get over the game of the year for this year. We got, again, Deathloop. No surprise there. We saw a lot of marketing. Deathloop's on there. Deathloop, It Takes Two, Metroid Dread, Psychonauts 2, Ratchet & Clank Rift Apart, and Resident Evil Village are the contenders for this year. And honestly, like, it's interesting because I feel like these are all great games, but like you said, in a year where those anticipated games, if even one of those games was on this list instead of the other one, I feel like that would instantly be the favorite. And so taking those out of it, I mean, I would say I would expect Deathloop is front runner, just because of, I mean, that game had some great reception. It got a lot of 10 out of 10s. I mean, Arcane does some great work, and I mean, I played Dishonored earlier this year. You've played Dishonored. Like, we're both impressed by it, and I think we're both interested in Deathloop for sure. What are your feelings?
Yeah, I think Deathloop also has that end of year buff where it came out a lot more recently as well, whereas something like Ratchet and Clank and Resident Evil came out a lot earlier in the year, and so they're less fresh in people's minds. And that's always something that I think...
Yeah, same with Intakes too, really.
Yeah, and so I think that's something that kind of like, you know, does factor into it a little bit. What's funny is the only game on this list... Well, I played like, you know, maybe half an hour of Ratchet and Clank checking it out with you. But the only game on this list that I've played is Resident Evil Village. And I can confidently say that the one game I don't think should be on this list is Resident Evil Village. And that's not to say it is a bad game. I enjoyed it. I had a lot of fun with it. I think it's a good like horror comedy schlock fest. But to me, it just didn't really stand out as, you know, doing anything like really substantial or... Mm-hmm. You know, like the standing out is that like, I don't think 2021 is defined by like, that was the year Resident Evil Village came out and it was this big like cornerstone in gaming. It just was like a fun game to have a joke with for 20 hours. And then, or at least that's how I saw it. Maybe other people enjoyed it more than I did, but it just doesn't strike me as something that really is like a quintessential standout game. A lot of these other ones...
I agree with you.
Yeah. A lot of the other ones seem like bigger experiences. Like, I really want to play It Takes Two because I love that. I love how they approach, you know, co-op and multiplayer. And, you know, Metroid Dread looks great. Deathloop looks great. Ratchet and Clank is, you know, super fun and polished game. But I don't know. I don't know how you get this kind of list and Returnal isn't on it. And maybe I'm just jaded, but...
That, yeah, it's interesting. Because I mean, like you, I haven't played all the games on the list either. Like I've played It Takes Two, Metroid Dread, and Ratchet, and so maybe a little bit more to say on those. But like Ratchet to me, and it's been a while since that game came out now too. Like for me, Ratchet, I view it now in retrospect as like it's for sure the best Ratchet and Clank game ever made, and it's also the same way as Astral Bot was. I think it's an even more like fully fledged out kind of demo for what the PS5 can be in terms of DualSense features and the way the SSD works, and you're just flying around all the time into these crazy environments. Like I think the game is excellent, but I also don't think it's like it's a revolution, you know. It's very much like more of the same style of Ratchet and Clank, but just on a bigger and better scale. And so I think it's great and I loved it, but I wouldn't say it's like, you know, a revolutionary game. And the same for It Takes Two. Like, I love those Joseph Ferris games. I think they're all great. I love the co-op aspect. I had a ton of fun playing through It Takes Two. But I think that game has a lot of flaws in terms of some of its story stuff. So I don't think it's perfect. I mean, for me, Metroid is my game of the year at this point. Like, I think that Metroid has a couple things going for it as well in terms of, like, it's a return of one of the, like, gaming's classic kind of franchises, if you want to look at it that way. And when you talk about game of the year, like you know, you wouldn't want to say like, oh, 2021 was the year that made me think of Resident Evil Village or like, you know, It Takes Two. But I think being the year of Metroid Dread and like the return of Metroid does have some kind of cachet to it, so I could see that being a good pick, especially since it is like, I feel it's legitimately one of the best games in that space, so I think it would make sense. I still think Deathloop's gonna take it though. But I don't know. I guess we'll see. I don't know the last time Nintendo, aside from Breath of the Wild, won a Game of the Year
award. That's the thing, is Nintendo's in that kind of niche where it's just so many people don't own Nintendo consoles. And I think the percentage, like, a lot of people that do own them are more like casual gamers. And so they're less likely to maybe vote at the awards. And that's not to say that there aren't tons of people who play Metroid Dread and would vote for it. I think that's definitely, it's going to maybe take second or third place. Like, I think it's going to be close. Like, it was an amazing game. So many people played it. Everybody loves it. I think it definitely does deserve to be here. But I just think that, like, a game like Deathloop that's on every platform, or I guess not every platform, it's just PlayStation, isn't it? I keep thinking that
PC.
It's on PC. Right. Okay. Yeah. So that's the difference that makes, is that there's just so much wider of an audience of people that could pick up and play Deathloop. And... yeah, I just think it's tough for like a niche system like Nintendo to pick it up. But at the same time, like, it's possible.
I don't
like
know.
People
the Switch
still
has like 90 million Switches out there.
Yeah,
though.
I guess so. I guess that is true, but I think like more people play games on Steam than on Switch. We at least would be my guess, yeah. Right? That would be my
totally.
My assumption.
I'm just playing devil's advocate a little bit.
Yeah.
Because you're not wrong, but I think the thing with Metroid 2 is like it's I wouldn't say the Switch is like a niche console, but I think Metroid is a niche franchise. And like
right.
the casual audience necessarily wouldn't be picking up Metroid Dread the same way they pick up like Mario Party and Mario Kart
and
Smash
Animal
Bros.
Crossing
and those type of Yeah.
I guess that argument goes a little heavier for something against Ratchet and Clank. It's like, you know, how many people have PS5s and have played Ratchet and Clank?
Right, yeah. So, sure.
But sure. Yeah, anyway,
I don't know. It'd be interesting. I mean, Psychonauts, interesting argument too. Like, it's on Game Pass.
Yeah.
So a lot of people will play that who, you know, so who knows? It really could be anyone this year, Kate. It'll be fascinating to watch and see who wins. I mean, we get some weird winners sometimes too. Like, you know, not that I can think of one on the top of my head, but really it could be anything. We'll wait and see. We're almost done for the show though today. Aside from our last story, of course, we like to end with a feel-good story or something at least a little bit off, you know, random, some random little story we find that's a little bit different than usual. And so this week we have an interesting story over on Destructoid about a car thief convicted of stealing, get this, over 180, I think that's pounds, right?
Yeah.
Is that pounds or yeah. euros or something? It's in Europe. 180,000 pounds worth of vehicle by using a Game Boy. And so this person was, first of all, this is kind of genius, actually. A gang of car thieves has been convicted in the U.S. for using, and now I think this is like a knockoff kind of Game Boy. It's like, you know, it's got a few extra buttons on there, kind of like a regular Game Boy Pocket. But I guess this thing has like some Bluetooth functionality that could be used to disable like car immobilizers. And so they could literally just open your car with a Game Boy and steal your shit, basically. So like, what an interesting story. Of course, they were captured on camera and you know, got convicted and whatnot. But these little, like, what is this Game Boy? It says SUP on the front of it. Like, it must be a different kind of.
Yeah, this is definitely
know,
some kind of
thing,
like third party.
How did
like...
they not notice that this was possible?
Yeah.
How did you not notice that this was possible?
I know. Yeah, this is something like knockoff. They're like, we should restart that. Yeah.
We should restart. That was weird. Okay. Who was that? I didn't even see.
What was
Where
that?
Where were we at?
Let me make a note. 46. Okay, so yeah, I think you're describing the Game Boy was when it went bad for me. You were like, say it's like stuff
sure.
on it.
It's fine. Yeah, so it looks like, you know, a Game Boy Pocket, but it's kind of a knockoff one. It says SUP on the front, like SUP. It's got a few extra buttons, and so I mean, I don't know how whoever makes this device didn't kind of look into the fact that it could open people's cars, or if this is a mod, but
yeah, or
interesting
maybe,
story
maybe the thief, like, you know, did some, you know, went in and did some things. They bought their Game Boy Pocket knockoff and then we're like, I'm gonna mess it. But yeah, it like mirrors the frequencies that car fobs use, and he gets, and so like, absolutely, okay, props, like points for creativity and for ingenuity, and that takes some intelligence to figure out for sure. But as we said at the beginning of the show, or I guess in the middle of the show, don't be an asshole, just be a nice person, and that's all you have to do. And this falls into that category of probably an asshole thing, shouldn't do it. Just play
$180,000 worth of theft.
Yeah,
I think don't be an asshole.
just play the GTA remake. Do not use your Game Boy to real life GTA is the moral of this episode.
Wiser words were never given. Everyone listen to Kate's advice, and everyone play some video games. Have a good time. I think that's going to close out the show for today, though. So again, thank you everyone for joining us. We will be back 1 week from today, next Monday, with another great episode of the Circles and Squares podcast, talking about what we've been playing recently. Again, thank you everyone for your support. You can find us all over the internet at CNSPod on Twitter, or our YouTube link is in the description as well if you'd rather watch the video format. Of course, we appreciate anyone who wants to subscribe or leave a comment on any of our content. And we love you all very much, so we'll see you again next time, and that's the show.